For only 10 cents per child per year, the Amma Resonance Healing Foundation makes homeopathic malaria prevention available for children in Africa. Their aim is now to reach 1 million children, and with your help, 600 Africa volunteers will make this possible. Please visit www.arhf.nl and donate. That's www.arhf.nl. Thank you. Right now in Australia, the state of Victoria is having their elections until 26 November. Victorians have been through some of the longest lockdowns, restrictions, and mandates in the world, all because medical authorities would not allow proven natural prevention and treatment options to be used against COVID. Don't allow this to happen again. For freedom, prosperity, and health, vote one for Dr. Isaac Golden and the Health Australia Party team. To find out more, listen to episode 126 of this podcast or visit www.healthaustraliaparty.com.au. Hello, Eugenie here. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to tell you a little bit about our two guests, homeopaths Denise Strages and Alistair Gray. Denise served as Executive Director and Head of Clinical Affairs for the Center for Homeopathic Education in New York City, bringing together the team and program that it is now, the Academy of Homeopathy Education. As Executive Director of CHE, Denise expanded the professional program to include a two-year full-time course, the only of its kind in the United States. She is fiercely committed to raising the bar in academic and clinical training for all homeopaths around the world. In addition to the bustling, low-cost clinic run by the school, Denise founded a not-for-profit charity for the homeless, addicted, and underserved populations. She successfully forged a partnership with a major medical institution in New York City and currently practices with and teaches doctors and medical residents in classical homeopathy and clinical applications. Alistair Gray teaches at and heads up the Academic Operations, Course Development, Research and Learning Technologies Department at the Academy of Homeopathy Education. In addition, he holds various consulting roles, including academic consulting roles at Endeavour College Australia and also College of Health and Homeopathy in New Zealand, also educational consulting roles for National Centre for Integrative Medicine in the UK, and consulting to many organisations on e-learning worldwide. Previously, he headed up the Homeopathy Department at Endeavour College, later the Bioscience Department, and he was the National Academic e-learning Manager. He has lectured under and postgraduate integrative medicine, CAM, homeopathy, and naturopathy for 20 years, including theory and philosophy, case taking and management, ethics, business practices, and scope of practice. He's a regular seminar and conference presenter worldwide and the author of 23 books and numerous articles on primary research in natural medicine. This was a very fun interview, and I know that you're going to love it. Let's jump right in.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout podcast, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now, your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we are hanging out with Denise Strages and Alistair Gray, the founders of the Academy of Homeopathy Education, and probably two of the most fun homeopaths you will ever get to talk to. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
I like that.
Lovely to see you again.
Yes.
Yes.
We go way back.
We do. Al was actually one of my lecturers at the College of Natural Health and Homeopathy in New Zealand, formerly known the Bay of Plenty College of Homeopathy. All very long words. But let's kick it right off, guys. Tell me how you got into homeopathy.
You start.
Me?
Yeah.
1,000 years ago.
At least.
I got into homeopathy because I was crook, as they say in Australia, like the dog's hind leg. And I had a number of really miserable symptoms, mainly hay fever, pretty grumpy. I was in my late teens, early 20s.
Grumpy and snotty. So attractive.
And and it was suggested that I go and see a homeopath in, of all places, Oamaru. And I drove from Dunedin, where I lived at the time, listening to very bad Jonama trading records. And I drove to Oamaru and had a consultation with this very strange woman who asked me for 2 hours a whole lot of ridiculous questions. I was deeply offended. I had no understanding of the relevance of those questions. Uh-huh. She gave me, she went into the cupboard, she and opened up a cupboard of something, did something, turned around and handed me a cup, and I have not sneezed again. Now, that's not true, because I have started sneezing in the Philadelphia spring. But that changed my life, that experience. That was in 1988.
Wow.
And you, Denise?
My story's not as dramatic nor as snotty. I came into it. Most people come into homeopathy, like our students and a lot of my clients, they find homeopathy because of their own suffering, right? And so many of our students are, oh, you know, my child. Don't let me interfere with your glass of wine. Students will come and say, oh, I found homeopathy because I, like Al, you know, I had hay fever, I had this, and then homeopathy, you know, was what really helped me. For me, it was completely different. I came in through an academic back door. I was about to start a PhD in clinical psych research, and this was in 1993. And my idea then was to look at how when the body is sick, the mind changes, or when the mind is off, the body changes. I mean, this was before people talked about mind-body medicine, like without saying, what are you talking about, right? So this was at it was a very early stage. So I'm about to begin this program, and I met this woman, and she was a psychologist, and she said, do you really think you're going to get to do that in this research program? And I was really naive. I said, well, yeah. And she said, no. And she said, do you know about homeopathy? I had never heard of homeopathy before. And I said, no, not at all. And she said, go look for it. Now, at that time, there was no internet. There were, you know, I would go to bookstores looking for it. And finally, I went to a hippie bookstore and I found one of Kent's books. And that was it. I started reading about homeopathy. I withdrew from that program, and the rest is history. But I don't think I took a remedy for 3 years.
That's amazing.
Right? It's weird. You don't hear about that.
No.
I know.
I've kind of heard the fall in love with the intellectual part of it. But they're not taking the remedies. Amazing.
I don't even know where you found one back then. You know what I mean? Like, it was so abstract to me. And then, you know, it wasn't like you could buy, like here in the United States, you can buy 30C potency for, say, the top 50 remedies in health food stores, in, you know, hippie groceries and stuff. But but you couldn't do it then. You had to find, like, a place to buy them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had kind of came in through the back door.
There you go.
Yeah.
I didn't know all of that.
And now you guys have got this amazing homeopathic academy. Tell us the story of how this all came about.
Well, we
it
need
was
violin.
An accident.
We need violins for that.
It wasn't. I didn't mean for it to happen. Okay. So how familiar are you with disco in the 1980s in America and Italian girls with big hair and hot curlers? Is this, you familiar with this phenomenon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was me. And so I had big hair and I used to set my hair in hot rollers and use a curling iron. And so I stopped being able to really feel hot. And so there was a homeopathy school that got thrown at me like a hot potato and I caught it. And because of the hot rollers and the disco, I forgot to throw it. Anyway, but what actually happened was our school used to be a part of a British school that I taught for some time, and they started a school in the United States back in 2010, and I started teaching for them in their school in New York, and then in 2013, I took over directing that program, and then in 2015, I think it was January 2015, they asked me if I would take it on. In all of its splendor, it wasn't doing well at the moment. It was struggling, and I did it because what were you going to say?
No, you say, you go.
No, you go.
Well, it's amazing synergy because I don't know if you know, but I was working in Brisbane in head office at Endeavour College of Natural Health. And I was running the e-learning, the academic side of the e-learning division for all of those thousands of naturopathic and nutritional and acupuncture students. Mm-hmm. And I got a message. Ping! And
we had met years before.
Yeah. And Denise was asking a whole lot of really amazing questions that no one asked. And she was saying, you know, questions about modern learners, what's the future? How do we go about a dynamic, contemporary, course in homeopathy? How are we going to reach people? When do they want to study? What do you think? No one ever asked me any of those questions. And so, you know, one thing led to another, and I ended up in America in 2015. And
but we spent all of 2014 really working on, well, how could we do this, you know?
And there's something else really kind of cool about it. I spent from 1998 to 15 years, teaching homeopathy everywhere where I could. I never said no to anybody that said, can you come and teach? I flew all around the world. I flew to Ireland. I flew to India. I flew to Thailand, Malaysia 1,000 times, the US, Boulder, everywhere. Wellington, Tauranga, Christchurch, Auckland.
Wellington landings.
Those landings. And,
oh, there, and yes.
I take Dramamine for that.
Yeah, but I taught so much homeopathy, and then I found, I was talking to someone that had taught as much homeopathy.
Not as much.
Wow, essentially.
I mean, a lot, but not as much as you. I mean, let's be fair.
And then we had this amazing opportunity to go, well, you know, if it's now our turn,
yeah,
you know, and then let's do it right, mm-hmm. you know. And I thought at the time it was kind of like, with the amount of experience that I'd had in distance learning, and that was back in, you know, 2010 through to 14.
Back in the dark ages.
But I tell you what, you know, that grounding at Endeavor, I hated it and I loved it. It was so good. Mm. You know, I learned a lot. I learned so much in those years.
That's the thing about, mm-hmm. like, there's teaching and then there's running a school. Mm. And I knew, so for me, like, I had been a teacher. You know, you're a teacher, you're a gun for hire. You go in, you land, and you're sort of the new person. Everybody loves you and you do no wrong. And they always go back to the regular teacher. They're like, ah. But if you're the person who's got to hold it, you know, you're not that flavor of the month or the one who comes in and tells fun stories with a different accent. And so we had to really think about that because we knew what it was like to teach for other people. And there were all these programs around the world that we had taught for. And what did we like and what didn't we like? And here was the thing. This was really important for us because why do so many people study homeopathy? They spend money, they spend time, they spend energy, and then they don't have a business at the end of it.
Like, yes, what is that? That's such a
Isn't
worry.
It? And we need good homeopaths. And so when we decided we would do it, and I wasn't given a lot of time to make the choice, I went to London to teach. And I get out of the tube, I meet my boss, we go and we're having tea, and he says, you're going to take over the school in America. I was like, who? I'm looking around like there's got to be somebody else here. It's not me. So I went in and I'm, you know, I have to spend the weekend teaching and I'm so distracted. So I'm on Skype text with him and one of my colleagues here. I'm like, okay, you guys, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And we have to decide by Sunday night or something crazy like that. And so I did. I decided it. And then the rest, it just fell into place. It really did. And we made the commitment and we said, we're going to take apart homeopathy education. We're going to deconstruct the whole thing. We're going to take it, we're going to smash it on the floor, and we're going to rebuild it from all the things that we loved, that we've seen. We're going to try to make better. We're going to do our best to not make the mistakes that some other people have made. Because, you know, the thing with homeopathy is that some of our favorite teachers are amazing teachers and they tell great stories, but they don't have educational experience, right? So yeah. You mentioned you interviewed Kelly Callahan, right? So Kelly, who's like all around one of the coolest people ever on the planet, hands down. So Kelly Callahan teaches with us, and her background is in education. It's actually in experiential education. And so when we met Kelly and we realized that not only was she a homeopath and personable and all of that, but she had background in education, we're like, dude,
hello.
Come on. Hello, come to Mama and Papa. Amazing. And so Kelly's been working with us ever since. It's been
She's
amazing.
Awesome.
So we made mm-hmm. this commitment to educational mm-hmm. standards, and the goal was mm-hmm. to raise those standards in homeopathy by raising educational standards. Like, I have this mm-hmm. thing that's really near and dear to my heart, which is you can never blame someone for something they've never been taught. You can't say, you don't do a good job at this. If no one ever taught them, they haven't had that opportunity. And so we had to figure out, how did we take the experience that we had and bring people in and show them some of the nuances?
So you know what I think that you thought, well, for me, you are the driver of the clinical side of what we do.
Yeah.
But it's all about clinic from day one.
Clinic.
And so by the time... Yeah.
I think you guys must be the only college that does that. Like, I don't know of anyone else around the world that does what you guys do. And I'm so jealous. Like, I feel like I want to go retrain as a homeopath just so I could have that. Because, you know, in our 4 years of full-time training in New Zealand, I think we only did about 5 cases before we graduated. Oh, and I know when I listened to an interview that you guys did with Kelly, and I think she said that she hadn't done any before she had graduated. She'd observed some cases, but that's really shocking.
We've got students that leave us with full practices and close the door because they've got so many people.
Amazing.
But
nobody else does this.
I know. Well, and part of it is it's hard to do.
Well, I remember. I remember one night in New York, staring out the window. You were asleep, and I was staring out the window, and I was going, "How?" Because I think you planted the seed in my head, and I was going, how do we do this with the technology? And then I suddenly realized, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, it was back then go-to meeting. Right. And I realized that we could run a live, distant, or virtual clinic with virtual students.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter where the practitioner and the patient were. If I got that right?
Yeah.
Or the supervisor. Mm-hmm. But we could have live, supervised, distant, quality practice.
And we had to do it. Because here's the thing. Because people would say to us, like, I don't know how it is in Australia now, but in America, there's this weird idea that you can't actually make a living as a homeopath. I mean, that's all I've done now for much of my adult life. Mm-hmm. I raised 2 kids as a homeopath. You know, and doing teaching and stuff, but that was my job. And I realized, because when we started having the discussion, it was like, well, why did you wind up being successful? And our answers were both like, because I had to. And that was like, if you have to do it, you're going to find a way to do it. But what makes you sort of, what's the bridge between the drive and the successful outcomes? Because if you have to do it and you're not good at it, that doesn't pay the bills. And I realized that for me, I was super lucky. So when I trained, I actually did my foundation studies a couple times, and I wound up at a program that had an incredible clinic attached to it. And I started working there while I was still finishing foundation studies.
Right.
And I got to see a gazillion clients. So I was just put into practice. It was like, oh, this is your job. You come in, you sit down, and clients come to you, and you do your job. And then on Fridays, I was the acutes person. And so because I was the low man on the totem pole, low girl on the totem pole, what would happen is on Fridays when all the other practitioners left, the person, her name was Paula, and she had a really beautiful voice like this. She had a hand truck. Like a little trolley thing. And all the charts for 5 practitioners for all the stuff that had to be done would come in. She'd wheel it in, pull it out, and leave me with a stack on the floor. And she'd say, goodbye. And I would have to figure out, like, what am I going to do with all these sick people? And that was it. That's how I mean, I had no choice, you know, and I had no other job, and nobody else was going to feed my kids. So that was a conversation that we had, was about sort of necessity and experience.
So I did a master's in the mid 2000s. How do you say that?
The mid 2000s.
And I ended up kind of formalizing what I thought I knew, and I did a piece of research, and in that piece of research I interviewed thriving practitioners, and they all said the same thing, and it was just so obvious that
they
said I needed to make it happen.
Yeah.
But they said the quality that got them through was tenacity. And in other words, all the schooling, all the excitement, all the learning that they'd done, all the reading, all the Kent, all the whatever, it came down to my choice and do I need to make this happen or not. And I found that really kind of a bit scary and a bit sobering, actually. And a bit scary, but But to me, what it suggests is if you want to get a skilled person through and busy at the end, they've got to do the thing that they're learning to do over and over and over and over and over again.
Repetition and skill building.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a segue to AJHN.
Oh, yeah. Okay, before we get there, so this is the thing that we might have talked about with Kelly on our podcast ages ago, because it's changed even since, because we keep thinking, well, how can we deliver the most clinical training? Because I think that's what does it. It's just over and over and over again, repetition of skills. And now,
absolutely,
the average AHE student graduates with having seen more than 100 cases. So like live, a sick person comes in, the case is taken, they participate in the analysis 100 times. That's crazy.
Well, it's pretty amazing. And so if they're leaving with, and they've taken, what do you think, maybe 40 of those 100 or 30 of those 100? Or more?
No. Because it would be observation for most of them. Then they get into their supervision. Mm. But like, we had a student last year who graduated. She had seen 53. She had 53 clients in her own practice when she graduated, and a closed practice within 6 months.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
That is so incredibly special, absolutely. And to have that all included in your course is wonderful, because I remember I had to pay my supervisor, I think it was $90 per supervised case that she did. So maybe luckily it was only five, because it would have cost a fortune to continue, you know, paying her. I had to pay her her full hourly fee for her to supervise my cases I was doing. So for you guys to have that included,
at the end of the day, there was a problem. There
phenomenal.
Is a problem. I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages with every clinical model. But the disadvantage of what you experienced was cost and numbers, you know, at the end of the day. And so, I don't know, we've been able to, you know, touch wood.
Yeah.
We've been able to crack that nut.
It's been good. And then this pandemic happened. You've heard about this, right?
Apparently.
I know.
Yes.
What happened, we were actually in New Zealand, and we came back a week early. We were meant to go to Waiheke Island for our last week, because Alistair is from New Zealand, so we go a few times a year, and we were there, and it was clear that, you know, it wasn't looking good in the United States. We came back, and I happened to serve a client population that was ground zero for the first big explosion of COVID. And so we would have landed from New Zealand on Thursday morning. And then by, say, Monday, I had 45 COVID cases in my practice, 45 clients. And at that time, no one knew what was going on. It just was like a ton of bricks coming down. And I thought, there's nothing I can do on my own. I couldn't keep up. I was going 20 hours a day. So I reached out to a handful of my colleagues and a student of ours, who just graduated, but she was a student at the time, and she had these sort of digital digital organization skills. She was able to help us create an organizational structure so that we could support people who were struggling. And so the Homeopathy Help Network was born. Gosh, we would have gotten back from New Zealand on, say, March 10th or 11th, and March 22nd was the first case that we took. We've seen over 2,000 cases since then.
Wow.
So we're an all-volunteer group around the world, actually. We have someone who's in, well, she lives in Canberra, Ruth. Ruth lives in Canberra. But
shout out to Ruth. She's currently in New Zealand.
Yeah.
South of New Zealand.
But we support all over the world. We've got an all-volunteer task force, an administrative team, a research team, and then the practitioner team. And we're training students, so students who reach a certain level of their training, so that they can participate under supervision in this process. And it's been incredible. We've learned a lot. And it has allowed us to take that infrastructure that we built just to deal with the crisis, to try and help when, the medical system couldn't do anything. And it was like, okay, well, homeopaths, let's do what, you know, Hahnemann started doing before the turn of the, 19th century.
Important to say, however, of course, that we are integrating all of our treatments with conventional medicine.
Everything we are not.
And seek your medical practitioner's advice.
100%.
All of that.
And actually, it's interesting. And not just to say that to sort of do a cover your bum, but We really believe in integration. Like, so one of the questions that we talked about for this conversation was about what do we see in the future. And what we see in the future is a completely integrated medical system. And so in our student mm-hmm. body, we're about 25% licensed medical practitioners yep. and 75% non. And we are working, yeah, wow. we're working really hard to develop a strong bond between the allopathic medical system and homeopathy to support that system and to support clients. So, you know, we encourage whenever possible some level of integration. And some people feel like you have to be a renegade and say, no, we're only going to do it one way. And we say, well, the more we try and work together, the more people see what we do. Like, we each work to our strengths, you know? And so if...
Well, we didn't even talk about this before the podcast, but that this is my seventh episode now, I think, and literally every single episode we have talked about this. I also feel it is so important that we integrate the two. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be one or the yeah. other. And this was not even scripted or anything. I didn't even tell you that this is one of the messages that I promote yeah. because, you know, we just had a mum on and her daughter was in hospital with meningitis. And her five-week-old baby, this was over a year ago now, she's well, but listen a couple of podcasts back, and she was in hospital. That was the best place for yep. her to be, but she had her belladonna there, and her doctor was supportive, wow. and she was using it, and the next day, the girl was so much better. So imagine a world where we were able to have the homeopathics or the acupuncture or the herbs in the hospital setting alongside conventional medicine. And I think you have a not-for-profit clinic that you have set up, Denise. Can you tell us a little bit about that, which is alongside conventional medicine?
Yeah,
right?
So that's actually how we started our foundation. Our charity was started in 2015 because we were asked to provide education to residents and interns at a medical school, at a conventional medical school in New York City. And so in order to facilitate that, we started this charity so that we had a structure for it. And when I said, okay, I'll go, let me go and observe. You actually came once and you said, I'm never going back again. He hated it. It was
Kiwi boy out of his depth.
Yeah, totally. This was, so just
actually,
to
that
give
wasn't,
it,
that wasn't the entire thing, but anyway.
It wasn't, but I mean, yeah. if you think about it, the context was this was in a homeless shelter in New York City, just outside, mm-hmm. just on the border of Harlem. There were people who were experiencing homelessness, people who were really, really struggling. You had people with drug addiction, people who had scabies. I mean, you name it. It was really, really tough. And so I went in because the job was at first to just train these docs to do this work. And after two times of going, I was like, yeah, this is not a key.
So these are medical doctors that you went in to tell them how to use homeopathics alongside what they were
yeah,
doing?
Yeah, and it became really clear that wow. the population that they were treating was, we couldn't use just, you couldn't just learn acute remedies for diarrhea and coughs and so forth, because these people came in with such complex issues that we really needed to dig in. Mm-hmm. So I went every Wednesday for 5 years, up until the pandemic, actually.
Wow.
And so I learned a lot, and we learned about the ways in which homeopathy can support the medical system. And so, and it was interesting because the interns and residents that would come through that knew nothing about homeopathy would see these follow-ups. So I would be working in the medical office. So this doc, you know, people would come in, she would be doing their, you know, their intake, and I would be taking their case at the same time. I'd have about 15 minutes to do, maybe sometimes 20 if I was lucky, a complex chronic case while they're getting their medical treatment. So the interns and residents would come and they're like, wow. how is this person not taking their Crohn's medicine anymore and saying that you fixed it? Or what about this lady with the vertigo? And
what about the guy who put his feet in water?
Oh my gosh, this case.
That was the... That
you
was
were
the,
there for the intake.
I know.
This guy, so oh I still God. Am in touch with him. That was one of the first cases that we saw. The doc sent him to us. She said, I don't know what to do with this guy, but you homeopaths will totally appreciate this. So this man was living in, so he was experiencing homelessness. He was living in a shelter situation, but he had his own room. So it was in a, you know, in sort of a, he had his own room in this, what do you call it? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Halfway
but he,
house.
Yeah, like a halfway house kind of mm-hmm. thing. And so one night mm-hmm. he woke up in the middle of the night. He got up to go to the loo. He put his feet down and there was cold water. There had been a flood and there was cold water up to the knee. A couple days later, he had a heart attack. And Never well after that. And then he developed all sorts of sequelae and complications related to that. And the doc kept saying to me, every time he comes in, he says, I've never been well since I had my feet submerged in cold water in the middle of the night, and all of this happened. What are you going to do with that in a medical clinic?
Well, homeopath loves that.
Exactly. Whereas a homeopath's like, yes, I can work
no
with that.
Problem. You did really well. And he had never heard of homeopathy. He would come in, he would come for his visit, and if it was on a day I wasn't there, they had the clinic twice a week, he would say, Where's that lady? Because he knew that I understood that he put his feet in cold water and everything went off the back of the truck from that point forward. Mm. It was incredible.
It's really interesting because throughout that time, you were going up the Upper West Side, and I've been working with a bunch of English folks, and the English folks are the National Center for Integrative Medicine, NCIM, and that's an initiative run out of the UK to train physicians or licensed medical practitioners to understand complementary medicine. And now it is this sort of extraordinary situation where complementary medicine practitioners and conventional physicians speak the same language, talk the same language, are totally focused on the same thing. And it's a two-year postgraduate diploma that we set up and ran. And my experience there has been amazing to really understand the strengths and weaknesses of these. In that context, mainly physicians who are locked into the system. Doctors are amazing. They've got brilliant hearts. They know, what it's about, and they are restricted, very constrained about what they can and can't do, depending on the system they're in. They might be in Australia, or they might be in the US, or they might be in the UK.
Yeah.
But don't mistake, what sometimes happens with are these good people, and so. That's been really important learning for me as well. And the other reason I said that is because this week I just got an email from JACM, Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. Now, in the research world, there's a whole lot of peer-reviewed journals that accept and publish complementary medicine research, really good, robust research. And the Journal of Alternative and Complementary, JACM, Alternative and Complementary, have just changed their name.
You're kidding.
Yeah, they've just lost the alternative.
Really?
Yep. And there's...
Oh, that's brilliant.
Well, it is actually. I believe it's brilliant because it's the Journal of Integrative and Complementary Medicine. That's their new approach. Time has changed.
Yeah.
This is no longer the 1970s.
Mm,
nope. And even though there might be some students or there might be some practitioners that are fiercely determined that they're going to find another way, this is not where...
Because are you going to do cataract surgery? Let's just be real.
I could do that.
You could... I mean, come
on. I'd be really good.
Or broken bones.
I would not like to volunteer for that,
Me neither.
Al.
I went with a
I got a steady hand.
Yeah, you're not going to do that.
I think at the end of the day, if we always keep in mind that our highest goal needs to be our patient in front of us, then we need to put ego aside and do what is best for the patient.
It.
And if we can just all, as healers, as therapists, just keep that in mind. It is all about the client and the patient. Just putting aside all that ego and everything else. Work with whoever you need to work with. Do whatever you need to do to help that person in front of you. That really is all that matters at the end of the
day. It's so interesting because it's not just like sometimes you send people to the doctor. I need to know what's happening with you. Let's
Absolutely. Yeah, I do as well.
But you know what's interesting too? And some of my clients are amazed when I do this or students when I tell them that I do this. Send them to the acupuncturist or send them to the physiotherapist or send them to the cranial sacral therapist. Like, wait, you can't. Sometimes you need to fix different levels of what's happening
Absolutely.
With the person. I love that.
I mean, today I did.
And there's so much chronic disease these days. You often need an integrated approach. You can't just pretend to be the end all and be all. We need to be humble and we need to, get whatever's the best result.
But there's a big fat but.
Client.
And the big fat but is...
Wait, you're not talking about me, are you?
No, I'm not talking about the but.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
One T, not two T.
Okay, good.
The big but is that that's not how homeopathy has been taught traditionally. And so, for
true.
Example...
Yeah.
If you're talking about this patient with diabetes and this condition and that complication and this behavior comes to the homeopath, the focus somehow is still on finding the correct or the right remedy.
The similimum.
It's just, it is, mm-hmm. it is kind of bizarre that's the focus. And yeah. All of the case management has been about, oh, let's assume that this patient is a client is only seeing me. Well, I don't see any clients that just see me anymore.
But there's something else too, because you said something really important. Wait, were you not done?
Oh, no, I was totally done.
Okay. No, but because there's this other thing, which is if you always think I'm going to find the remedy that fixes this giant problem,
You
always start at square one. Whereas homeopathy is not just about the first prescription. It's about long-term case management. And the second prescription is like, it's like a chess game. And if you are constantly thinking that you're going to do everything with one masterminded move, you're forgetting that you've got pawns and you've got all these other moves to make, you know?
Oh my gosh. I am so glad that you've said that, because that was me, you know, a few years ago, because that was how I came out of my training, thinking this one remedy that I'm going to give and that's going to work. And let's face it, there's probably about 5% of clients where you're going to have that. That idea of the one similar, I'm so glad that I have evolved past that and I can see the bigger picture now, and we need so many different remedies. And I do still have homeopaths that say to me, look at your prescriptions, it's nuts. You're using organ support, you're using bowel nozos, using a constitutional remedy, you know, tissue salts in there as well, and you're referring this person to their doctors to go and get a stool test done, and, you know, these other things, and you're sending them to the chiropractor. You know, what are you doing? But really, we need an integrative approach, because we're dealing with some crazy cases these days of massive suppression, massive pharmaceuticals. We've got 5G, we've got Wi-Fi, we have people addicted to their phones, we have people addicted to everything. So we need all the tools that we can possibly use to
listen
get
to you.
The best result.
Fantastic.
That is it.
Oh,
yay.
My Lord. Woo. Folks, that's evolution.
Listen
right
to
there.
What she says.
What she says.
But that has been keeping a very open mind. So this wasn't the case 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was like, no, one remedy, that's it. Don't go see anyone else. And it's through staying humble, staying open-minded, realizing I don't have all the answers, realizing I need to, if what I learn is that what maybe not working the best, I need to stay open-minded and ask for help, ask for, you know, mentorship, ask questions to, at the end of the day, serve your patient best way that you possibly can.
I love that.
And that's why I'm excited about your clinical training program, because I think your students are going to come out of there with much more open-minded, because they're going to see and practice all these different cases. I was wondering if you have some success stories from of some of your graduates that you would like to share.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you kidding?
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. You know, so this is like, this is everything, because that's why you do it, right? Well, our students joke that I always say you can never leave. Right, it's like a family. It's like
Italian
in an
mother.
Italian family. If your kids, like if your son moves out before he's 40, then you've done something wrong.
You've done
right?
a bad job.
So we try to keep everyone around. So part of the success story is actually because we're trying to create a community of homeopathy. So not just like it's not like a diploma mill where you get people in and out. It's like, what do you need in order to do the best job that you can? And so we keep creating more and more opportunities for our students to learn and experience the world of homeopathy. And so we keep them around. So some of the success stories are about how long we keep people around, like no one really leaves. And that's important. So we have created, with the Homeopathy Help Network, we've got this infrastructure now where we have all of these systems in place so that we can offer long-term mentorship. Mm. So we have our acute care internship. So students come in and they do this incredible module of treating acute cases under the supervision primarily of Rebecca Azzarelli, who's a dear friend. Our kids went to camp together. And now they're 25 and whatever. But so she is the primary acute care supervisor, and she's amazing. She is just, she's gentle and strong and smart as can be. Anyway, students graduate from that, and then they have the opportunity to, as they finish all of their sort of preparation for chronic care, then they get into their chronic care externship where they're seeing their cases under, they're in a pod. So 3 to 5 students in a group, they have one-to-one mentorship with a supervisor, mm-hmm. but they also are in this small group for discussion. And so these apps that are available make it so that people can, in real time, be texting and supporting each other and learning from each other's experience and practices. So I would say that the success story in some way is about how our students have helped us to build a system. But then there are the people. Like, we... Yeah, I'm thinking about a handful of them. So we try to tell our students that, like, we're not teaching you just to be a homeopath, but to be the future of homeopathy. So leadership in homeopathy. So we try to get to know our students and their skill sets so that we can help them find places where they can really do the most good. And so a couple of people, like Rachel Bongel, she's incredible. Her mom at graduation came to me and she said, you know, Rachel wants to be a teacher. I was like, hell yeah. We already knew that. She was a teacher beforehand. And so she's been doing student support. So anyone who's struggling with any concepts, she supports. She does one-on-one just remediation, helping people to just, you know, just revisit concepts until they really have them. We've got Amy Baglivio, who is on our supervision team. So Rachel and Amy and Kelly Callahan, who we talked about, they're on our supervision team. We've got a couple of our students who are now in leadership in some of the professional organizations. Jared Coggins is the vice president of the North American Society of Homeopaths. Randy Fruchter is the vice president of the CHC, which is the Council for Homeopathic Certification. Parker comes to mind. Parker Pranczyk. She has so many jobs with us now. She graduated three years ago, maybe?
She graduated 3 years ago, works in our research office with me.
Yep.
She is a brilliant marker of assignments and providing feedback, really meaningful feedback, so students see the strengths and the weaknesses of their answers and their, you know, their assignments and stuff.
And she teaches for us. Academic integrity module. Yeah. So
you really like to keep it in the family.
Like, no kidding. Seriously. Well, no one, if they leave, I cry. It's all about me.
Yeah.
But with Parker, so one of the things that she helped us to understand, because her background as a teacher in supporting students who didn't have all the resources, she said, well, what about some of these students who are adult learners who maybe haven't been in the educational system for decades, or people, you know, who are super smart but don't have a traditional academic background? How do we help them? So we created this whole module that helps people to learn how to reference, how do you write academically, how do you get the support you need so that you can engage in this high-level academic programming? Because that, if we can teach each person to do better, it helps us all to present ourselves as a profession better. And you can't say that only academic people can be homeopaths. You know, it's like we need to just take the people who come from different backgrounds and really cultivate the way that the establishment asks us to participate.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Now, I have watched a lot of videos on YouTube, and I have never seen that portrait behind you before. Can you please tell us about that? Is that a new addition?
Yes.
Today.
Or have I just been very unobservant?
My wrist is very... I've been painting all day, and I'm a little...
performing cataract surgery and a painter.
I'm busy. Very busy person.
This is really exciting, actually, because...
It is exciting.
So that's Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy. And Samuel Hahnemann was born in 1755, and he lived to 1843. And he is amazing because he was able to create a system of medicine, so an entire set of theories and principles, as well as the pharmaceutical applications. And so today was a bit of a bittersweet day, but an amazing day. And I think... So the story is that there is a manufacturer of homeopathic remedies that has been here making remedies in the United States. They're part of a long tradition and lineage. I honestly don't know their history enough to say how long, but let's just say long. And they have held a lot of the history, the ephemera, and so on and so forth. And so they're consolidating their operations and moving to the West Coast. Now, a part of what they had in their possession was a very important library. And that library was the library from Julian Winston. And Julian Winston...
Brilliant homeopath.
Brilliant homeopath and historian. And he was American. I believe he was originally from New York, but he lived in Philadelphia for a long time. He lived in a firehouse in a part of Philadelphia called Fishtown, and he was a collector, and he collected a lot of remedies. He had a kit of Kent's. He had...
I've had Stanford Zachary 10M from that kit.
And you probably needed it. And... and so his life, so Julian fell in love with a homeopath from New Zealand, Gwyneth, and he moved himself and all of his stuff to New Zealand. You take it from there.
So I'm not sure when that was, but anyway, they moved
late 90s, I believe.
They moved to Tawa, in Wellyville, mm-hmm. And they lived there. And my first lecture was because I wrote a letter to him, a letter.
My mail, with a stamp on it.
And I met him and I met Gwyneth Evans, and then they asked me to go teach. And so I have actually slept on the couch in Julian Winston's library. It was an amazing collection. And one thing led to another. He died in 2005. And
you were there.
Yeah, I was. The library itself then moved a couple of times, and it turned up down the road.
Well, but wait, there's one other part, which is before it found its next home here in Philadelphia, the school that we were a part of in London was in negotiation that it might move to be housed in our New York school. And it didn't end up there, which was good because we wound up having things changed and whatnot. So it wound up back in Philadelphia, which I think was the right place for it to be. Anyway, now I'll go back again.
Yeah. Anyway, so actually, that portrait is not from Julian's collection.
No, it's not. But Julian's. But today, I was asked to go out and
this
to,
is how I thought.
Oh, that yeah.
This is the.
A bit tricky to see.
You can't really see.
Yeah, but it's the cover of his book, The Faces of Homeopathy, and it was presented to him...
with this plaque.
With a plaque from the Bay of Plenty College of Homeopathy students.
Aww, yeah. My alma mater.
In 1999.
1999, isn't that amazing?
That's so amazing. And amazing. So here it is.
It made its way back here to Alistair. So,
wow.
So we have this collection. So our foundation, in addition to the other stuff that we do, we curate a library. So we have a research library, antiquarian medical books, homeopathy books, and basically the stuff that we're afraid is going to get thrown away. We're like the homeo hoarders. And so I have a dear friend who is the archivist of the Hahnemann materials here in Philadelphia at Drexel University. And funny enough, we know each other not through homeopathy, but we met 24 years ago when our kids were babies. Our nannies were best friends. And so we met, and she's like, what do you do? I'm a homeopath. I'm the Hahnemann archivist. It was sort of like, oh, my gosh, you know. Anyway, so we've been in touch, of course, and I've gotten to do research in the collection that she archives and so forth. So we found out that there was this collection that included Julian's entire library that was going to be moved to Drexel University, and that there were duplicate items that they couldn't take, and there were some of his personal items and some journals and things, and so they called us to see if we wanted them. So today I drove out and packed my SUV, filled it. I didn't lift all the boxes. I had some help, but with all of these items, including that beautiful gift for Alistair.
Amazing.
And this painting of Hahnemann that I saw.
Absolutely amazing.
And they were saying, everything on this wall is yours. And I'm looking, I'm like, not that, you know, and then yes, that.
Wow.
Yes. Right. How about
absolutely amazing.
The library, we've got a really beautiful library. The Jay Yasger, who you might know from the...
I was going to ask if it was Jay Yasger, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got his dictionary on my desk.
Yeah, exactly.
Jay is lovely. Yeah. I love him.
Can I show?
Yeah.
So we've got... It's a bit of a mess at the moment, unfortunately.
Because we've taken on so... You see all the boxes.
There's...
Wow.
Oh, I can't...
I saw your little photo that you posted on your Facebook page with you as a ghost going through the library books, yeah. Like coming back as a ghost so you can continue reading. And I laughed so hard because that is literally what I will do. I will come and ghost all of those, you know, archive texts.
The library was tidy until this afternoon.
Yeah, because I brought it a car, literally a truckload of books. And so one of the things that our... Wow. Foundation does is We want all these amazing books to stay in circulation. We don't want people to recycle them. So when someone rings us up, you know, people ring around to say who can take these books. So if someone retires or their estate, they donate these books to us. And so every couple of months, we get truckloads of books delivered. And we actually have an intern who's, moving to Philadelphia in a couple of months. And his primary job is going to be to organize this library, take all the duplicates so that they can go to students of homeopathy and...
Best job ever.
Right? I know.
Yeah. I was actually, I don't want to use the word lucky because unfortunately two homeopaths passed away in New Zealand about 10 years ago, not too far away from each other, and I managed to get their collections. It was actually on Trade Me. Do you remember Trade Me, Alistair? It's like, kind of like a gum tree. And just found it on Trade Me, and it was, I think it was something like $200 for like just... boxes of books, and you know, the people selling it obviously had no idea of the value. But you know, the books I like the most, I've got a pile up there, but those tiny little leaflet booklets that you get, and it would just be like a, you know, treatment on ringworm, actually, that burning book, the tiny little one, but it's so valuable. You just find like really hidden gems, and the gems. Paper is all brown and smells like muffles, and it's just it's wonderful. So before we wrap up, I'm a little bit sad. I was hoping this would carry on forever and ever, but you know, we're going to have to do another one of these in the very near future. But your favorite three remedies for each of you and why? And I purely do this to watch the homeopath squirm, because trying to choose your three favorite remedies out of over 8,000 is so hard. But for each of you, what are your top three and why?
It's so simple.
For you personally.
Any squirming at all. Really? The answer, totally. My top remedy of all time is Ferrum Foss.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the reason is because
when you can't think of anything else.
When you don't know what to do, give Ferrum Foss. its clinical indications are uncharacteristic.
No clear symptoms.
Right. That's it. But that one's
true. Cool. That's true.
My second favorite remedy is Bryonia, because it's just amazing for me.
Yeah, it's your own personal savior.
I'm always, when I've got man flu and there's so much pain.
That should be my favorite remedy to get you out of man flu.
Yeah, which we know is much worse than normal flu. Man flu is worse than any flu you could get. Yeah,
totally.
And I've
that's
got
only
a,
two.
That's only two. And my third would be my first. Remedy is a favorite which got me on the path, and that was Allium Cephalon.
Allium Cephalon.
Yeah. Can I tell you a funny case thing before I, just a homeopath?
Of course.
Okay, so I had this case years ago of a kid. He would have been maybe 12, 13 years old, and his key symptom was buckets of snot. That's what his mom said. Buckets and buckets and buckets of snot. They would go to those big box stores and buy the, you know, the boxes of Kleenex tissues, and he would blow his nose before school, filling the bins, like 2-3 bins every day. I mean, it was an Allium Cephalon case, but of course, I'm thinking, oh, what do I do? And I'm like scratching my head. I'm calling friends, and they're, what's wrong with you? You know how homeopaths overthink things. So I gave him Allium Cephalon, of course, and it was like 5 years. He would repeat it every now and again. We went up to maybe 200C, and it would have been literally 5 years before he needed something else. And it cracks me up because we think, it's a remedy made from onion, right? It just seemed like such an underwhelming prescription. I wanted to be fancy.
Exactly. And that's, we so often get ourselves caught up in that. Hey, I remember when I first started in clinical practice, and I'd be like, oh, I want to prescribe all this funny stuff. But you know what? It was Polycrest 90% of the time. It. I got to prescribe some butterflies here and, you know, a couple of little insects over, you know, weirder insects here and there, and, you know, cockroach and a housefly or whatever. But it was Polycrest all the way, 90%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Your top three, Denise?
So my top three. So I guess if we're going to say remedies that helped us or that started us. So the first time I went to a homeopath, which was, you know, well after I was studying homeopathy. And it's funny when I think about the questions that he asked me, because, you know, you're not supposed to ask leading questions. And he was like trying to get his confirmatories. And he's like, do you like bacon? You know, it's really kind of. So phosphorus was the first remedy that I got,
Oh, I can so see you as a phosphorus. Yeah, absolutely.
Don't you think it doesn't do anything for me?
Yeah,
either, but there was a.
It doesn't. No, you just have that beautiful, bubbly phosphorus personality. Yeah, that would have been my guess.
So it was my entree into the homeopathy world. So I think I have to say I love that. But the other two remedies would be remedies that I think I couldn't imagine my practice without, and one is Metarhinum. so many kids that just so many kids need that remedy. And
yes,
it's just amazing. So that would be one. And the third remedy.
I'm glad you're saying that, because I feel like I am prescribing Metarhinum to so many kids these days. And I'm like, am I making all of this up? But I feel like I'm giving Metarhinum to every second child, because there's just like, you know, so much stuff and so much ADD and just, you know, ears and nose and just
green snot.
Yeah.
Right. Green snot.
Yeah. Okay. That's making me feel better now. I'm on the right track.
Oh, good. Up all night swinging from the chandeliers. It's like, you know.
Yes.
So that, and then I would say the third remedy is sepia. And the reason is that I work with, I work in a community of Orthodox folks that have a lot of babies. These women who have, you know, six would be on the low end, 10, 12. Wow. I've worked with women who have had 14 babies. And I'll tell you what, sepia is a remedy that just is magical for them. And I've just watched these women just have their hormonal systems just recharged. You know, it really helps them to, I don't know, to feel in and of themselves. And it's a remedy that sort of, it's like their vitamin through their hormonal life. I don't know what, I don't know what I would do without it for some of these folks.
I always joke, it's the remedy when you want to kill your husband and run away from your kids. And so many mums swear by that remedy, myself included. It is such a great remedy.
Leave your uterus behind. Who needs it? Let it fall right out, right? So there's, but that's, you know, if we're going to talk about symptoms, and that
and you know what, actually prolapse is a big thing. We just had in our group yesterday, somebody was asking, and women feel embarrassed to ask, hey, I've got a prolapse, what do I use? And you know, so we've got to talk about these things.
It's one of those remedies that is really helpful. So those would be my three. So one personal, that sort of was a fleeting personal love, but Metarhinum and CPA in terms of serving my clients.
I reckon Gallium is also another big one on your radar.
You know, Gallium cleavers. Yeah, I have just recently come upon that remedy, but it's really good. Hey, I just use it as an organ support for the lymphatics, along with some phytolacca and pulsatilla, all in low potency. You did say gallium, hey?
Yeah, but gallium, I think you might be talking about a different one. This is the mineral remedy, gallium, element 31.
Okay. So not
the plant.
There is a gallium which is made from cleaver. Oh, the plant.
Yeah.
That's the one I was talking about. Sorry. You mean gallium the mineral?
Gallium the mineral. And it's the proving was done a while ago and published. One of my friends did the publication. And that remedy, we have had
heaps of cases. Amazing results.
Unbelievable. I'll tell you, for homeopaths who might be listening, you can get the proving at dynamis.edu. It was one of Jeremy Scher's provings. And you'll see if you download the provings, if you buy provings on dynamis.edu, I think they're like $7 or $8 American dollars, right? So inexpensive. It's all for their charity, and it funds Homeopathy for Health in Africa. This proving, this is a polycrest of still undiscovered proportions. We've had half dozen cases in the last 2 years in our teaching clinic alone. I have a case, in fact, if I had to say my favorite case ever, this is a child, she's now 18, 19 years old, but she suffered from a severe head injury when she was maybe 14. She was bedridden for 4 years, so literally didn't leave the house. And I just have been working her case little by little over the years. And about 3 months ago, gave her gallium. And I have a video of her. She sent me a video. She was out of the house smiling. She was crying with happiness and being able to get up. It was like the book, The Secret Garden. Remember that children's story? And she's doing so well now. That remedy is just amazing. In fact, I take back from my top three. I will replace my fleeting relationship with phosphorus with gallium.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay.
No worries.
Wow. Well, you've just dropped a bomb here for me, because I'm going to go and hop on the Dynamis website right after this. And definitely go and have a read.
Read the part about going forwards and backwards. Element 31 and the number 13. There are these beautiful images. It's a fantastic proving.
Wow. Now, please give us a rundown of how people can get in touch with you. Where are all the different places that you engage online? And
Yes. So AHE, our school, the Academy of Homeopathy Education. Mm-hmm. So we do full-time and part-time programs and this huge clinical offering and research and all that.
Now, can I just say that were you to be in West Australia, you can still study.
Yes.
Because we've got full-time, we've got part-time, we're live online, we're blended, and critically, clinical training lands at a good time for you folks.
Yeah.
Same with the East Coast, even the Kiwis, we've got a couple of Kiwis
in our school. We do, we have a couple of Kiwis.
We've got the Frenchies, we've got the folks from France.
Yeah, we have people in mainland Europe, we've got
Puerto Rico,
in the UK.
Yeah, UK.
Alaska, so around
East Coast, West Coast. I don't know that the time zones work for Asia.
Well, we have Kuala Lumpur.
We've got Kuala Lumpur, but that's on the same time zone as Perth.
Yeah, 12 hours.
Anyway, so...
Yeah, which is great, actually.
Yeah.
So we teach... So because we run 7 contemporaneous cohorts, we teach in the morning and the evening in the U.S., which is just flipped, the opposite. So there are opportunities for people all around the world to join in with us.
Can I also just say that if you want an experience, if you were a practitioner, you might even be qualified. Who knows? But you want to go deep with acutes.
So this internship. So this is something that's really important. Mm-hmm. So when we founded the Homeopathy Help Network, and it's been just growing and expanding, and we are now. So we have a goal. One of our goals is to conduct outcomes-based research that has so many numbers that no one can say this doesn't work. And our goal is 5,000 cases a year for 5 years. So 25,000 cases, a 5-year case study out looking at outcomes. And there's nobody who's going to say that's 25,000 placebo cases of like kids.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and in acutes, not chronics, but really just looking at, you know, this is what happened, this is what the intervention was, and this is what the outcome was. Mm-hmm. And so we have been able to expand this acute care internship to include folks from around the world who really need to or want to just practice this other skill set of seeing lots of acutes, because it's different, right? When we get into our chronic
practice, it's absolutely different.
So please reach out to us, because one of the things we want to do is be able to serve people in other time zones. So having folks from, you know, the Southern Hemisphere, that would be really beneficial to us. There's full training involved. There's supervision involved. There's we have remediation if you need to just do revision on acute training and so forth.
Yeah, remediation.
So any homeopaths listening to this? Any homeopaths listening to this, absolutely get in touch with you guys.
Yeah.
Totally.
So there are a couple ways you can reach us. So there's ahe.online, and that gets you through to just our main school website. For information about our internship, that's hello@homeopathyhelpnow.com.
Hello.
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 And... You know, and then we have Home Foundation, and that's our charity. And so, you know, we are really trying to just get as many people as possible involved in a community of homeopaths. And so our charity is called Home Foundation. It's spelled H-O-H-M. And we'll have a new website actually launching probably by...
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, do you think? Wow, okay. And so home, what it means is...
it's okay. It'll be another week before the podcast go out, so you'll have 3 weeks.
Okay, so that's fine. So we chose the word home because we wanted to be the home, like so the like home, like your place, for homeopathy. And we spelled it H-O-H-M because, you know, the beginning of homeopathy, but also om. So om as the sound of universal resonance. And so it's your home, and it's the place where you can resonate with everyone around you.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so we really want it to be a place for everyone. We don't want it to just be for, you know, students and graduates of our program, but rather to be for everyone. We want to find a place. So if you have something that you want to do in homeopathy, we want to be able to facilitate that. So we do. So we have our, you know, clinical offerings through the Homeopathy Help Network. We raise money for scholarships. We try to make homeopathy education affordable to anyone who's committed to that study. We conduct research. So we mentioned our outcomes-based research. Al is working on educational research. He's about to become Dr. Alistair Gray. We'll have to all kind of, you know, when he gets that qualification soon. And then we do historical research, and that's something that both of us are very much interested in. That's really my passion. And then, of course, our library. And so anyone who's interested in participating in homeopathy in that way, you know, please reach out to us. We do our best to just find places for people to feel like they have community.
Yeah.
You really are a one-stop shop. Denise and Alistair, you guys are so generous with your time. I know it's getting very late where you are, and you have done this podcast right on the back of a Zoom call. And you have such busy lives, but you took the time to come and have a chat with us and share your passion with us. And I want to thank you so much for that. And I'm so excited to see, you know, where your school goes and the amazing work that you guys are going to do. And thank you with all my heart.
Thank you for inviting us. It's just so much fun to get to share homeopathy with people. We love it. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else is there to do?
Absolutely.
What else are we going to do? Talk about homeopathy.
Yeah.
Love it.
Exactly. Love it. Right. Have a wonderful evening, guys. Yes. Thank you so much for your time.
See you.
See you.
Bye.
Hi, homies. I'd like to invite you to come and join me at the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast Facebook group, where we can discuss past episodes and you can help me decide on new content for the show. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel, where you'll find my free Homeopathy at Home 30-minute introduction video, which is perfect for anyone completely new to homeopathy who's ready to take charge of their own health. Just search for Eugenie Kruger Homeopathy on YouTube. And if you'd like to support this podcast, you can make a once-off $5 donation by visiting www.buymeacoffee.com/hangout. Or if you'd like to make a monthly donation, you can visit www.patreon.com/homeopathy hangout. And if you're in Australia and you'd like to purchase one of our beautiful homeopathic kits, single remedies, or one of our amazing combination remedies, visit www.eugeniekruger.com, where you can also sign up to our newsletter so you don't miss out on any special offers. And if you're interested in advertising on our show, please email info@eugeniekruger.com. Thanks so much for listening.